Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon, Upstate. Welcome to Upstate Outdoors. You're listening to 106.3 WORD, the Upstate's talk station, as if you didn't know that. We are coming to you live today from our studios at 25 Garlington Road, and I got a guest host with me today. My buddy, brother from another mother, we got Dieter Mellhorn with us. Dieter, welcome to Upstate Outdoors.
Man, it's good to be back here in the seat, man. Thanks for having me.
And I was just going to say, this is not the first time you've been in the guest host spot.
It was about a year ago, I think, was when I was in here. And it's fun. It's actually kind of a little motivation for me to finally kick off a podcast. So that's cool, man. Thanks for getting the ball rolling. It's fun. Y'all got a good thing going here.
So before we get in the show, just a little bit about Dieter. Dieter, you've been, you do a lot of stuff behind the scenes in the audio visual. I don't know how do I describe that.
I'm the guy behind the camera in the TV world. We got a production business that provides camera crews for ESPN, NASCAR, different news outlets, that kind of thing. So I do, that's what I call the real TV world.
Yeah, the daytime job.
Yeah, and then I have the online TV world where I have my YouTube channel and some of the other stuff around that.
And if you folks have never seen it on YouTube, it's Dieter Mellhorn Fishing, which there's a lot of focus on catfishing, but not all of it. I mean, you do whatever's biting and even get into a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, and that's something I'm trying to expand on. It's just right
some
now.
Some deer hunting, some turkey hunting.
I got probably a great, a tremendous turkey hunt with my son from last season on there. And it's kind of the whole algorithm thing kind of goes back to catfish. That's what ends up showing up. But, yeah, I'm trying to do a little crappie fishing, whichever part of the state you're from on that word, and some striper, and then I go chase my sharks. I like catching sharks, too.
What's your biggest so far?
A shark?
Yeah.
We got one that's about 8, and there was a small, I call it a small 8-footer, and we had another one that was a bigger 8-footer, so it's probably in the 300. I've heard guys say 300, 350, but 300 is something pounds.
Not
tiger
bad
shark.
Not bad at all. I've caught that from my kayak, but that's okay. You'll get there. But we got a great show coming to you today. We'll talk a little bit more in depth about very interesting. A lot of folks are, they're wanting to get into YouTube, and is it a business? Is it a hobby? Is it a both? It's a great way to sink money, owning a boat, great way to sink money into something and tell your wife you're actually making money. But so we'll talk to Dieter more about that. And then we're going to have world-renowned catfishing guru Phil King on the show with us. Phil is basically when all you young guys were learning about catfishing, you were reading stuff that they wrote about Phil King and some of the other stuff. And so we're looking forward to talking with him just a little bit earlier. So, hey, you good? So looking forward to talking to Phil King.
I'm excited to get to talk to him. I think I seen him at a Cabela's tournament, 4 or 5 years ago. So, yeah, he's a good one to have on.
So we'll talk with Phil. And then second hour, we're going to have the Roadkill Cafe. And in true Upstate Outdoors fashion, we impose on the guest host whenever we have a guest host to bring us a recipe. So I'm a little curious, what do we got today?
I'm just going to sum it up with shark bites.
Shark bites. Awesome. That's a favorite this time of year in North Carolina.
Yeah, and that's why I picked it. It's a good shark bite, the kind of shark bite that you want, not the kind that everybody in the North Carolina coast is getting right now.
And then for those of you who are regular fans of the show, we're a little bit out of order here. We're going to put the Upstate Outdoors blog on, and we're going to talk about learning the ropes for better anchoring. Now, that's something that everybody can put to use, whether you're a pleasure boater or whether you're a fisherman or whether you're a sailboater and want to anchor up for the night. So got some good information for you on that. And then We're going to talk with the chief of fisheries from the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. We've got Ross Self. We're going to talk with Ross. A lot of stuff in the news lately about striped bass populations in the Savannah River chain, Lake Hartwell, not so much about Lake Russell, but then Clark's Hill with, you know, some survivability issues, you know, fish kills. We've had both of them in both lakes and, you know, get some information on the stocking program, which they stock pretty much all of our inland lakes here in South Carolina, except for Lake Wiley. Right?
Yeah, there's
there's a few in Lake Wiley where
we just had a stocking program about 10 days ago.
Yeah.
God put on when we had the flooding on there on the river system. So they got washed through the floodgates at Lake Norman and through Mount Iton and on down. So
we'll maybe that's a question we should ask. I know the answer to it, but we'll ask Ross about why we don't stock stripers. It's basically because the state of North Carolina won't even take a phone call from South Carolina and vice versa.
Well, if you ask the people from North Carolina why they're not stocked, it's kind of the same. If you wanna ask that question to him, I would love discuss it.
Yeah. So looking forward to talking to Ross, and then we'll have the calendar of events. Got a couple, and a couple of them evolve around you know, the upcoming July 4th holidays, and then our parting shot is a story about an alligator in Texas. And I'll leave it at that. And it's kind of a cool, kind of a sad story. So we'll go from there. So, Dieter, I know, you know, being a catfisherman, and you said that the downtime, there's about a month or 6 week, 5 week period during the year when you and a lot of the other veteran catfishermen are not fond of trying to catch blue catfish, and that's during the spawn. And that's probably why you're here, because otherwise you'd be out on the lake catfishing.
Exactly.
So yeah. So what's the deal with that? What? How come? I mean, all other fish that you catch, you can't wait till they spawn so you can, you know, load a boat with them. But catfish are different.
Yeah, it's not like bass fishing where you can go sight fishing where they're up shallow. Catfish are not visible when they're spawning. They become pretty much inactive as far as feeding goes, and it's tough, really. Our rule of thumb is from Memorial Day to July 4th, it's a great time to go on vacation. It's a great time to go
shark fishing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great time to get your tackle cleaned up, work on your boat. But if you want to catch trophy catfish, it's tough. You can still catch them. You'll still stumble into them. I caught a 30 a couple of days ago. But it's not the ideal time to be finding them. Now, with the new technology, the side scan, I've got some videos up where I think they are beds and they're in deep water.
Mm-hmm.
They look like craters on the moon underwater, and you'll find them in clumps. And we've caught fish around them. So I think you may see more of that in the future, people trying to target those. But honestly, with me, I just as soon leave them alone, let them spawn, catch the stragglers that want to eat, catch some eating fish during that time period, and let the big fish do their thing so we got them for the future.
Awesome. Well, we're going to go to our commercial break now. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more to our guest host today, Dieter Melhorn. We've got a lot of, if you're interested in maybe starting your own YouTube page or visiting somebody else's, we got a lot of that to talk about, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Stay tuned, 106.3 WORD.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, we're continuing our our discussion here with our co-host, Dieter Mailhorn, Dieter Mailhorn Fishing. Now, Dieter, you've been involved in audio-visual stuff and doing, I mean, you got a great website here at DieterMailhornFishing.com. But the question I want to ask, and let me set this up before I ask you the question. Right. You and I are kind of opposite ends of the scale. I mean, I've been an outdoor writer for about 15 years and doing a radio show for about 6 years, you know, kind of the mainstream media. You know, we mass communicating here, okay? But there is a, and I won't even call it underground anymore because it's probably taken over, but the whole, you know, presenting media, you know, fishing, hunting, information, which is what we all do, but using, you know, social media and YouTube, and a lot of folks really would like to get into that. And I would say from a, I don't even know if I want to call you a non-professional, but from somebody who started from scratch into that, I think you've done very well on putting up a YouTube page, putting good content on it. And tell us a little bit about some of the struggles you've had with that.
Well, it all started, we basically cut the cord on cable and satellite TV.
At the house.
Uh-huh. And I had always had videos up on YouTube, and it was mainly just to show people. I could say, oh, look at the fish I caught. And I all of a sudden realized my wife was, listen, this is up until 3 years ago when this started. I was totally ignorant and naive about the whole YouTube world in the way that I know it now. And she said, hey, you can stream YouTube up there. You can watch your buddy Steve Douglas out fishing.
Yeah.
I started watching it. And I started getting a little education in the whole world. I started saying, well, that's cool. Started finding some more stuff. It became my new TV. I could watch ITV, as I call it.
Yeah,
I
so,
watch
so exactly, you come in and turn on YouTube TV.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can watch exactly what I want to watch around whatever topic I want to watch. I don't have to wait until the Outdoor Channel has a show on that I want to see. I don't have to worry about DVR and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, I said, you know what? A little quick turn. I decided I wanted to do that. I wanted to make my channel more than just a place to put a couple of cute videos. So I started building it. And as I tell people, I spend more time watching videos on YouTube about how to build a brand, make content, market, than I do fishing videos. I got fishing buddies. Oh, did you see the video? I said, dude, I haven't watched a fishing video in like a week. I'll binge watch. I usually sit down at night in a recliner finally and binge watch. But it's a, if you're trying to do it to grow it, there's two ways to do it, like you said earlier. You can do it just for fun. There's nothing wrong with that. Not everything has to be a big brand that's growing and getting bigger and subscribers and views. It can just be a fun place to put up some stuff, some memories. That's the biggest thing I tell people, and I wish I would have started way sooner with just putting hunting and fishing up there with my son and my daughter and, you know, stuff with the family. Or you can turn it into a career. There are people that are making a living, and there are people that are making a fortune on YouTube. And
there's probably also some people who are making okay part-time money, you know, doing the YouTube. And that's probably what most of the anglers are looking at. How do you get into that? What's the difference between the casual YouTube and doing the monetized YouTube?
I think the biggest thing is committing the time to it. There's this little, you know, people casually look at it like anything in life. You go, oh, all I got to do is do some cooking videos and throw them up there or shoot some videos with my family and throw them up there and I can make a whole bunch of money and make a living doing this. It doesn't work that way.
People got to want to see what you got.
And you got to work it. You got to put in the hours. Nobody that has any success to it. It's like I told somebody the other day, I said, it's very easy to make one or $2 an hour on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot harder to make a good side hustle or even a living doing it. And that was the thing that the kind of my evolution here really in the past 6 months is I sat down and started tracking. You know, I'd sit there and put videos up and I say, man, why isn't this doing better? Why don't I get more views? I started tracking how many hours I put into it. And I go, oh, well, you put, you know, 15 hours into it last month. Whoop-de-doo. How much do you actually expect to make putting 15 hours a month in anything? So, again, if you're going to try to make it into something, you've got to commit a lot of time to
it. And let me ask you this. So if somebody, I mean, is there any difference? And I've got Roku, you know, because I don't have a smart TV, but mm-hmm. I got the Roku stick, which turns my, you know, big screen TV into a smart TV, mm-hmm. and I get the YouTube channel. Now, you know, and I can see like you said, I can go in the search, which is very annoying. I really wish YouTube had a better way than scrolling across. But is that something I can pull up? Can I pull up Dieter Melhorn Fishing on just the regular YouTube, or do I have to go in and subscribe to your channel and get a special feed on that?
That's the beautiful thing about it. You go to YouTube, you type in my name, which is spelled like Dieter. It's really confusing, fat guy with a name like that. If you type in Dieter and catfish, you'll find my content. It's pretty much that simple.
Okay.
You can go directly to the channel. But that's the cool thing about YouTube. A lot of people, it's a new, sort of new technology. A lot of people aren't into it. I had people kind of like, well, I don't really want to pay for a subscription. It's free. You click, all the subscription means is that they notify you when stuff comes out. And you're following it. It's if somebody's
kind of like somebody's Facebook page. When you like their page, then you start to get their feed on your Facebook.
Exactly. And YouTube is very good. If that's content you like, if you like a lot of fishing content, a lot of hunting content, you watch those videos. The way that whole algorithm works and everything, it will start suggesting to you similar content. And you'll start to get those suggestions. So if you go watch my video, you go watch Luke at Catfish and Carp, you'll start seeing something from Chris Flores or some of the other guys out there, Steve Douglas. Their videos will start popping up in your feed too. So it's the wild, wild west still, though. I will say that. Things change there. Things evolve. They're still figuring it out, but this is very new technology. And right now they're the only really show in town that is doing anything like this.
Yep. You and Dar Sizzle.
I wish I was at Dar Sizzle's level.
And I'll give you, if any of you have ever followed Dar Sizzle offshore, very attractive young lady down in Florida, does a lot of YouTube, a lot of good fishing. Yep. And when I was lining Dieter up to be on the show, I actually was like, it was kind of a joke.
Yeah.
Because I did a Photoshop one time. I was like, hey, Dieter, here's what'll help you with your YouTube. And I photoshopped your face onto Dar Sizzle's body.
Still got it in my phone.
Still got it in. But so I was like, hey, I'm going to email Dar Sizzle, see if we can get her on the show today. Just, shot in the dark. And she actually emailed me back and was like, okay, I'll be on the show when? Yeah. And I told her, oh, it's on Saturday and we do this. And, and I'm like, my hands are shaking, And my wife actually, when I told her, she goes, I'm jealous. I'm not jealous because you're talking to Dar Sizzle. I'm jealous because you get to talk to her.
Yeah.
Because she's a big fan, too. And then it came up, was like, oh, man, we're going to be out fishing, shooting a show on Saturday. Maybe we can do it at a later time.
Yeah. So. I would have loved to have spoken with her mainly about just her brand and how it's evolved and how it's grown. I mean, she's a good-looking woman. She dresses very appropriately to get the views. But she's really evolved a lot too. And, you see that it's more than just being good looking or catching big fish. You've got to have more than that. And her channel has really done a good job in controlling that evolution over the past couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't think the world is ready for Dieter Melhorn in a thong catching catfish.
Some A/B testing, and it's not. I had a lot of click through rate. No. It's been very low on the videos.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good. Good to know. It's good to know that you tested that idea before we went to it. So, but great stuff. And also you're doing. If you want to go to Facebook, Dieter Melhorn Fishing, you put up links just like we do here at Upstate Outdoors. Or like we're supposed to do, and sometimes do, sometimes on Saturday I'm like, oh, I need to put up a link to the podcast on there. But you do a link whenever you do a new YouTube video.
So. Yeah, I try to wrangle as much as I can the different platforms. I'm on Instagram. I do a little bit of Twitter, not real good with it. But, on Facebook. And when you go to DieterMelhornFishing.com, I got links to all that stuff. And I try to just use them all as tools to just get information out there about fishing and help educate people, because that's really my fundamental goal. I got it written on a dry erase board in my office. Have a positive impact on the anglers that you reach. And, that's the bottom line, is try to help them, educate them. That's the goal and all of it that I'm doing.
Awesome. Awesome. We're going to go to our break now. When we come back, we're going to ring up one of the icons of the catfish world, Phil King. And any of you catfishermen out there know that name. And so we're going to talk with Phil, and just hang on. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. 106.3 WORD.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Well, our next guest really needs no introduction. If you even have a casual interest in the catfishing world, been around, and I don't want to say been around forever, and he was one of the original ones, but a lot of these techniques that guys are catfishing with nowadays originated from the man we're talking with today, and that's Phil King from Corinth, Mississippi, right, Phil?
Yes, sir. Corinth, Mississippi, right close to 21 miles from the Tennessee River. Yes, sir.
There you go. Well, welcome to Upstate Outdoors, Phil. It's an honor to have you on the show, and thanks for spending time with us.
The honor's mine. I just enjoy catfishing and sharing information.
Well, now, Phil, let's go back a little bit. How long, when did you pick up your interest in catfishing?
Oh, I was about 18. Bruce Balk carried me to the Pickwick Dam. Told him I couldn't catch nothing. All I could catch up there was rocks, and I've been addicted ever since. So that was about 43 years ago.
Wow. Now, and, you know, it doesn't hurt if you're going to be a catfish fan. It doesn't hurt to be in some of the best catfishing country in the United States. And there's a ton of fish in that area. And we've also got our co-host with us today is Dieter Melhorn. And Dieter was like, hey, if he's guest hosting on the show, and he's like, man, we got to get Phil King on the show. So, Dieter, you got like a whole ton of questions here that you wanted to talk with Phil about.
Oh, yeah. Phil's one that when I first started chasing big catfish, dude, you were one that kind of a lot of people looked up to. When did you start really getting into tournament fishing? How did that start out?
Well, it started at the little work tournaments. They kept wanting me to fish, and I just say, leave me alone. I just want to go fishing. So they finally taught me in that, and it went from that. I started fishing the local catfish derby in about 1994 up here at Pickwick, and we won it first time in 1998, and we won it four times. So that started the addiction to tournament fishing. In 2003, we won the very first Cabela's tournament, classic at Wilson Lake in 2003, and then we won the Bass Pro Shop Championship by the Mississippi River 2007, 2009, and 2011, three consecutive tournaments in a row. It wasn't there every year, but that was the last good run we had on the Mississippi River.
Now you have guided, you fun fished like everybody, and you fish tournaments. Tell people, we got a lot of listeners that kind of don't know what those three worlds are like. Tell people kind of what the difference is between all those types of fishing, because tournament fishing is different than going out and just fun fishing versus taking a guide party out.
True. I retired from guiding in October, so I won't make that clear up front, but it was a lot of fun. I did it for 19 years. Met a lot of nice people. Outdoors folks are some of the nicest folks you'll ever meet in the world. I never had nobody mistreat me or abuse me, and they came back and they told others. So that's the guiding. Guiding, the difference is, you know, they're wanting to either catch fish. I offered two trips, catch fish or trophy fish, 20-pound and larger. So less bites on a trophy trip most of the time, unless you just have one of those glorious days that everybody talks about every now and then. And then most people I carried over the years just wanted to catch fish. So that was, we're talking 1 to 5 pound fish is what we targeted with smaller baits, of course. And then the tournament fishing, you really got to focus on how to catch in Mississippi, Tennessee, and Alabama. And now Kentucky, with the length laws, you've got to focus on two overs and the rest of three unders. And anywhere else, it's five as big as you can catch. And I think Santee maybe have a 34-inch law now. So there's been some good conservation efforts along with the tournaments. Instead of trying to put five, the biggest ones you couldn't lie well, it's toned down in a lot of places to two over 34 inches and then the rest under, which is a good thing. It's hard to keep five big fish. Sure enough, big fish alive all day.
And Phil, all these things that you were doing, you know, tournament fishing, guiding and everything, that sort of earned you a reputation, especially winning so many tournaments. That earned you a reputation among, you know, the catfish. But when you became, let's call it a household name in the catfishing world, was when the two or three trips, I know TV shows that I saw that you were on fishing with Bill Dance. How did that come about?
My good friend James Patterson introduced me to Bill over there. I'd watched him all my life, just like everybody else, even though I don't bass fish. I learn from all types of fishermen. I learn from saltwater. I learn from bass fishermen. I learn from catfishermen. I learn from anything about fishing. I learn something. I learned how to tie the snail knot from the saltwater group. So I met Bill through James Patterson, and he said, well, you want to do a TV show sometime? So, yeah, we did four TV shows and had good luck on all of them and got a lot of trips. Anytime you can book a show with somebody that's in the top five for 40 years, you're going to get a bunch of phone calls. So that boosted my guide career. Plus, I still work full-time, maintain a full-time job. So I had a pretty full load with sponsors and work and fishing and guiding and tournament fishing. You can just throw all that in the bag, and I was pretty busy for 19 years.
Some of those shows that you did with Bill Dance, you know, up until that time, were, for at least in my experience, those were the biggest blue catfish I had ever seen. I mean, you know, somebody catch on a TV show or something. I mean, you know, you go down to Santee and you see pictures. But I had never seen the size catfish that you caught on those shows when you were on with Bill Dance. And I think a lot of people have that same feeling.
Well, that's what I did for 19 years. Did hundreds, if not thousands, of magazine articles and interviews and TV and fishermen. In fishermen and then North American Whitetail and then local out of Channel 3 in Memphis and some other smaller TV shows and videos and how-tos. So did a lot of getting the word out there about catfish. Most people, when we started fishing tournaments too, I'll throw this in there, everybody threw the anchor. That was it. We was out there with a trolling motor drifting, you know, drifting, catching catfish, moving all the time. And as long as you got current, you know, have to be in a current situation. And we was winning. That's when we started winning tournaments, you know, and doing real well. Now everybody's doing it. Everybody's got a Minn Kota, Tarova, autopilot, or at least a trolling motor of some kind where they can anchor vertical troll.
I credit you with a lot of that drifting stuff that I do and a lot of us here. I know the guys down on Santee started to develop their own technique for it. You've been at this for a while. What other evolutions have you seen take place in the catfish world? It's like I've told people before, when I first started tournament fishing, you know, it was a bunch of guys showing up in some John boats and tiller steers, and now we've got guys showing up in Lunds and Sea Arcs and you know, express boats that are $40,000-$50,000. What have you seen take place over the past 25, 30 years in the tournament world?
Exactly what you described. I started out in a 1448 John boat, moved up to a 16, and then to a 20 and 24, and been running the Sea Arc Pro Cat 240 for since 2010, 20 footer first, and I went to 24, which was much nicer for guiding, had a lot more room. But that's the biggest evolution. Sea Arc is one of the first manufacturers that actually listened to the catfishermen and said, we need a 80 to 100-gallon live well, 60, 70 inches long and aerated and all that. And they was the first one to listen when I went and got my first boat. He said, well, what else you need? Steve Henderson at the time was VP of operations and now he's president. But anyway, I said, nothing. This has everything on it that I've always asked for that I couldn't get. I mean, so they started listening and other companies, I think, followed suit. And that's what got them through, helped get them through the 208 crash for everybody else. They were listening to the customer, and I think that's what companies have to do more of instead of less of. Because I remember my first interview, my first resume to a boat company. I sat across the table, and they was kind of looking down their nose with their head tilted down and looking at me, and they was listening to what I was explaining I was wanting to do. And I was very surprised and shocked that I got a boat deal was the first one I tried to. But it was a very funny look, looking across the table at that person looking at me while I was doing an interview with him trying to get a boat deal. And it was very interesting, to say the least. But evidently, I made a decent presentation, and I got a boat deal. And Don Worth, a writer, good writer, I told him what I got, and he said, oh, no, I said, they should do better than that. So he calls the president of the company. So I got a much better deal, even after writers have helped me a tremendous amount over the years as well, not just TV. So the writers, you know, they played a big part. They put the articles out there. I did the time with them, and they put the articles, and some of them are still using the same photos. So I can stay young forever. So
that's what I was going to say. When you said you've been in it for 40-something years, I was like, wow, the pictures I got of you, you're like 29 and holding.
I was probably in my 30s. 30. I was about in 38-ish when we won that first tournament, I think, or maybe in the 40s.
Wow.
So,
wow.
But well, the one thing he mentioned, Santee, we was over there vertical trolling the first time I went out there with the Capellas tournament. I had some guys from Santee. The guys from Santee called me after that. He said, man, we tried that down there by the dam this winter, and we have absolutely killed the fish vertical trolling like you was doing up there or was trying to do when the wind would let us. And they had a blast. They learned. I didn't know I taught them a new technique, but they called me and told me they was just wearing the fish out down there around the dam vertical trolling like we tried.
Wow. Now, Phil, let me interrupt you just for a second. We're coming up on a commercial break here. We'd like to hold you over, and if you'd hang on for just a few minutes, and when we come back, we want to pick up and talk about that, because that is a revolutionary technique, talking about the Santee drift fishing. And we'd love to talk with you more about that and some more. If you can just hang on, we're going to go to our commercial break right now and be back. More Phil King.
More with Phil King on 106.3 WORD.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
And we're back. We've been talking with catfishing icon Phil King, and we picked him up. Phil, thanks for waiting through the break. And the question that I wanted to ask is, since you got into the catfishing business, man, it has just grown by leaps and bounds. And I'm talking about not only just the interest in catfishing, which I think has always been there, but the tournament. And like you mentioned, the manufacturers getting behind that with making specialized gear. I mean, what have you seen the evolution like since you've been in the business?
It's just that anywhere in just about in the country, if you want to fish catfish tournament, whether it's a fruit jar or a formalized tournament, Cabela's or the Ohio River Trail or the Santee Cooper tournaments, Alabama tournaments, the Tennessee River tournament. I mean, just about in your back door anywhere now, you can, if you want to fish tournaments, you can fish tournament. And, that's one of the biggest changes. And then you got folks still craving and reading on the internet how to just catch catfish, So there's all kind of upcoming folks, It's something anybody can do and enjoy. And if you like to catch 1 to 5 pounders to eat, that's a bonus. That's what I love. That size there is what I love. I never keep anything, even guiding, I never kept anything or let anybody keep anything over 10 pounds. So you can do conservation while you're fishing, you know, and you can always, generally, if they're biting at all, you can catch more than you can eat in several meals, you know, in a day's fishing. So it's just a lot of fun. You know, you get bit a lot of time. You know, you get bit quite a bit. So it's just a fun thing for anybody to do. Good thing for kids. You know, it keeps them active. You know, gets them outdoors. So it's just good for all age groups.
And Phil, that conservation that you mentioned is very important because there's more, and I know you've seen it, more and more pressure putting on the resource because it's becoming popular. What do you think? Well, you've seen the stuff that's been put in place in Tennessee. Tennessee's done a pretty good job with their regulations, but more needs to be done. Santee's done some stuff with, or South Carolina's done some stuff with their regulations. What would you like to see states do to help conserve the resource and protect it for future generations?
I think it's more about the public than it is the resource. The resource can put all kind of laws and regulations in place, but it's up to the honest fisherman to keep that conservation lined up. Let me just give you an example. Everybody, I mean, I've talked to people, I said, what are you going to do with that big fish, you know, a 40, 60-pound fish? Well, I'm going to keep it and eat it. I said, you ever think about how long it takes for one to get this 50 or 60-pound Tennessee River? All 2 or 3 years. Bad, wrong. Tennessee River, it takes one 10 years to get to 30, 22 to 72. Alabama harvested some to see truly age them within plus or minus 2 to 3 years. They do not grow to that size overnight like people think. It takes years. The 103 that I caught on the Memphis at tournament was estimated 60 plus or minus 5 years old. 65 plus or minus five, depending on how, you know, how accurate the skin graft aging was. So they, in the Mississippi River, it takes them forever to get to 100 pounds. And then Santee's probably got the fast growth rate that I know about, 9 to 11 years to get to 100. So, and the math is they have 16,000 pound of eggs. 7% of those 16,000 survive to eating size. Well, you know how aggressive eating size fish, so how many of them actually get to 30, 40, and 50? I don't know. Not near the 7% that hatched out to get to eating size, 1 pound or 2 pound fish. So you got to think about the growth rate and all that, and that's why it's always better to put those big brood fish back and let them breed and make plenty of fish for many future generations to come.
Do you think that we can, you have somewhat of a background in commercial fishing from way back when, and you understand it. Is there a balance that we can hit between the recreational fishermen balancing the resource and commercial fishing? Is there room for all of that to take place? Is there a place for the commercialization of the sport, or what's your opinion on that?
I definitely think there's room for everybody because we targeted 1 to 5 pound fish to sell to the restaurants the 12 years I did it. It's kind of changed from that to the pay pond fish, you know. They buy the big fish, take them out of the river, and they never come back. That's the kind of the issue I have with the commercial part, that where it's still legal to transport fish across state lines over, you know, 30 to 100 pound fish. And there's still loopholes in the laws that they have now. You know, I can stock some out here in the pond, tell somebody to come pick them up, and I can send them to Pay Lake. So there's loopholes even in the system we have now. You know, you got to depend on the folks to be honest. There's not enough law enforcement to cover everything, just like police and National Guard and everything. There's just not enough officers. So you got to be honest. The fishermen just got to be honest and do what's right.
Awesome. We've been talking with Phil King, and Phil, we really appreciate your time being with us on the show and your insights into the catfishing industry, and also just what you've done for the sport through the years and continue to do. And you folks out there, just like Phil's talking about, it's up to every individual. You know, it's fine, keep enough fish to eat, make sure you turn the brood fish back, and let's save some so we can all have big catfish to catch for now and future generations. Phil, thanks for being on the show with us.
Oh, thank y'all. And let me say one more thing. We need to thank folks, really early folks, like Jim Moyer, Toad Smith, and folks like that. They started writing in them fishermen when they had the Catfish Insider every month. I want to recognize those folks because they really started my interest in big fishing, especially Jim Moyer on the Cumberland River. I wouldn't sit down and read that article or that book or that issue till I had time to read it from cover to cover. That's what got my interest. So I got to give credit to the folks that need credit too. So James Patterson, you know, Harold Dodd, a lot of people after that taught me a lot of things. So appreciate all them too.
Awesome. Thank you, Phil.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show with us. So, you know, looking at, and I've been on a boat with Phil, and you know, I was one of the Johnny Come Latelys in doing some articles with Phil, but just the knowledge that he's got, and kind of, we didn't really get into that as far as talking about, you know, the modern drift fishing and stuff that he started doing. It's like you said, you know, back in the day, everybody threw an anchor out.
Threw them in the water. But, yeah, some of the stuff he came up with, you know, with drifting where they were doing in the rivers with current, that got changed around and modified like all fishing to suit other people that were in lakes. And, yeah, he's real instrumental. And he's got that dadgum last name of King. You put catfish in the middle and you remember the dude.
So. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. And didn't even really get a chance to get into the whole bumping thing because, you know, that's a catfish technique that a lot of those guys out there on the rivers use. You don't hear a lot about it in the Carolinas, maybe unless somebody's in a big river.
And it's funny to see those guys come out here and fish that do the bumping when they have a big Cabela's tournament on Santee or Watery. They're not lost, but they are kind of like lost when we go out there and try fishing those big rivers.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, well, how come this isn't working?
Totally different world, totally different technique, but it's the same fish, and the good guys can do both. So.
Awesome. Well, I tell you what, it's just we're going to go to our break at the end of the hour, and when we come back, we will go into the Roadkill Cafe, and I'm excited to see what Dieter's got for us. So hang on. We'll be right back after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.